think it's important for us to like take the idea of convenience as something that is our priority and make the priority to be, you know, our nutrients that we're consuming and also the future of the planet for our children.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orat is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome everyone to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orat. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Michele Fox. Michele is a Brazilian native, slow food chef, small minority farmer advocate, and North and South America Business Development Manager for Food Bay TV, a food and lifestyle television network in Africa. She is also the host of Craft Food Podcast, where she interviews leaders in nutritional sustainability and the new dietary manager for Mid Valley Hospital in Omak, Washington. Michele has over 15 years of experience in culinary. She recently moved to a 90 acres clean slate farm in eastern Washington, where together with her family is crafting a PNW wild plants heaven using regenerative practices. Once able to slow down, she was able to understand the small farmer and the need for the food industry to shift into its conscience to seasonal cooking so we can secure the future of food. Welcome, Michele, to The Butterfly Effect.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So you've been working in the culinary field for over 15 years. Was food always your passion?
Yes, 100%. I can't remember a day that I wasn't cooking. I started cooking about at the age of 7 with my grandmother in Brazil. Pretty sure she was grooming me to be a good wife.
And that's when you knew you were going to be a chef?
Well, I didn't necessarily knew I was going to be a chef. I knew that I really enjoy cooking. I knew I enjoy watching the happiness that my grandmother created when she made food. Mm-hmm. She was kind of like a dietitian in a way. She just didn't know. She's like, I think mm-hmm. we need a little more vegetables. And so that intrigued me a lot. By the time I was 16, I went to be a foreign exchange student in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And my exchange to the parents up there in Alabama, they had a restaurant called Lake Marie Restaurant. And so that was the first time I actually was inside of a restaurant setting. And I thought, I could probably do this.
And in your work, you focus on sustainable cooking. Can you explain what it means?
People ask me like, oh, you're a chef. So what do you love to cook the most? You know, and I think they're mm-hmm. expecting me to say like Japanese food or Brazilian food. But my answer is always I like to cook with what's available and what is in season today. So seasonality is something that is in the core of my cooking. So whatever is available today is what I want to cook with. To close the loop from that ingredient to my pan, to my mouth, is what I work on and what my platform is all about.
So sustainable cooking is different than seasonal cooking, or is that the same thing?
It's the same thing. I think, you know, to be sustainable is to be seasonal, right? So you or yourself are in New York. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're in New York, is January, you're under snow, and you go to a fancy restaurant and somebody provides you with the raspberry.
Right.
That raspberry took thousands and thousands of miles. It left the vine green. It was sprayed until it got to the restaurant, and then it was sprayed again to become red. It has zero nutrients, no, you know, it's empty calories and it's just for the eye to eat it. So then, you know, we're teaching people to eat what's not in season, which then therefore it becomes empty calories that, you know, you're just pretty much wasting your money at that point.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I feel like in today, everything is available all the time, right. Especially in big cities. So when we go to the supermarket, we can get whatever we want. And you mentioned New York in the snow, there's obviously basically nothing growing in the snow. Right. Then what can we do?
Yeah, so, you know, things like apples and bananas and oranges, those are being grown all year long because we have California and things like that. So when you don't have something that's growing around you specifically, at least try to see things that are grown in your country to start.
Yes.
You know, so when you're in that grocery store and you look at that little sticker that every single fruit has, you can look in there and they have to put on that sticker which country that fruit or vegetable is coming from. So that's a good way to kind of check. Another way for me personally is I do a lot of food preservation. So, you know, we dry peaches, we can tomatoes, we can green beans and asparagus and all these things that are not available at the time that the winter comes along. But we do have it because we have preserved it as in, you know, drying, dehydrating it, salt curing and things like that.
There's values, obviously nutritious values for us to eat based on what's in the season. I'm sure there's also values for the environment.
Oh, yeah. Think about how long did that food, that ingredient that you're about to put in your mouth or in your pan, how long did that have to travel in a truck or in a boat or whatever to get to your mouth, you know? So if you can diminish that amount of trucking and all that, it's better for the environment for sure.
Okay, so if we want to switch to seasonal cooking and sustainable cooking, I guess number one is to look for that sticker and see that is food that is grown close to us or relatively close to us. Is there any other reason or anything else we should look for?
Another thing I think it's really important is because then we'll be supporting farmers, right? So it's really important to support farmers these days. Our farmers are dying. And when I say that, I don't want to be negative. What it is that people are getting old. We all are getting old. There's no way around that. And majority of farmers are on their 50s, 60s, and 70s. Their children have watched their parents grow in a hard life, which is farming life. And they become, you know, tech people in the city and they want to find a different job that doesn't, you know, a lot of work and no money. So we're losing farmers as we speak today. We're losing farmland as we speak. And, you know, I do think technology needs to come in like a vertical farming and all these things. But at the same time, we cannot forget about the actual regular farmer, which is who feeds majority of us.
Of course. And speaking of farmers, you recently moved to a 90 acres clean slate farm in Eastern Washington, where together with your family, you're crafting a PNW wild plants heaven using regenerative practices. Maybe we can start with what is PNW?
PNW means Pacific Northwest, the west side of the United States. In my farm, we call it clean slate only because probably for the last 40, 50 years, nothing has been farmed here yet. Therefore, you know, there's no pesticides and things like that. So a lot grows wild, like yarrow and St. John's wort and rhubarb and asparagus. And there's a lot that just grows wild. So I want to bring back everything that should be growing wild, but it got destroyed because people just want to monocrop and things like that. For example, yarrow can be used as a medicine, but it can also be used for cooking. So anything that's used for medicine slash cooking is what I'm interested on.
How much different is it from the traditional agriculture?
Well, it's different in so many ways. You know, number one, it's not a monocrop, right? Which means like if I took my 90 acres and grew corn only, what happens is that the soil doesn't get replenished, right? Like certain plants will take nitrogen from the soil and certain plants will deliver nitrogen to the soil. So if you grow a mix of produce and mix of plants and fruits and vegetables, that means that majority of the time you're going to be taking something from the soil, but something else will be going to be giving something to the soil. So that's why monocropping is so dangerous for our soil. Because, you know, when we talk about farming, we need to talk about soil, right? Everything starts with the soil.
Yeah.
We have dust bowls all over and dust bowls are created because mostly because of monocropping and pesticides. The soil has its own way of fighting pests, right? But once you grow one single thing, then that, for example, corn is taking all the nutrients and everything out of the soil and not replenishing with anything else. So then the soil therefore becomes sick in a way.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So you're breaking the balance in a way.
Yes.
But can we feed the world like that?
Yeah, so that's the thing, you know, like I think that there's like a really long campaign of thinking that we need that middleman, that we need to have everything available every day of the year. All these things only began about 70, 80 years ago with industrialization. You know, mm-hmm. that is a sliver on the time that we've been on this planet. And way before that, for the longest times, we were growing what we needed around us, right? I'm not saying that people in New York have enough space to grow what they need, but around New York, there's a lot of places that there's a lot of dirt out there that's where things could be grown. But then we go back into the problem of, you know, we don't pay the farmers enough. A tomato, a farmer might get 15 cents for it, but you're going to pay a dollar. So that middleman, the guy that transports that tomato in the truck, mm-hmm. gets majority of the price, but only touches that tomato for, you know, a couple of hours compared right. to the farmer that has grown that tomato for 6 months.
Right. So you suggest going back to a farmer's market and drop that middleman.
I think it's important for us to like take the idea of convenience as something that is our priority and make the priority to be, you know, our nutrients that we're consuming and also the future of the planet for our children.
And we also need to remember that when we transport, usually those crops are either frozen or picked before, so it will sustain the time of travel between countries.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything gets harvest green. And like, for example, today you're eating the apples of last year because the new apples haven't came out yet.
Yeah.
A lot of people say like, oh, you know, canning and preserving like seems like a monster that is so hard to do. But, you know, start small. Like, you know, if you really love, let's say, salsa, right? Mm-hmm. And you only have one window in your apartment that has, you know, a good sun, like a southern exposure, put a couple of little pots there, go grow a tomato plant, go grow a couple of cilantro plants and an onion plant. And there you go, you're gonna have enough salsa for your next few months just out of those.
And how do you preserve? I mean, it's great that I'll harvest and I'll have it fresh, but
yeah,
is it
canning? Canning, you would have to can it, right? So canning, you made your salsa just like regular. You're going to eat it today, but you mm-hmm. made enough for right. 10 mason jars, right? So mm-hmm. what you do is it's called a water bath. And, you know, there's books all over the internet. You can just search, how do I can salsa? Super easy. It's just a big giant pot, a big pot of water that you boil, and after you close that mason jar with the lid, you drop that in the water, and each, depending of what you're canning, have a specific amount of time that you need to leave it on the hot water, on the boiling water. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You take it out, and you hear that pop. That means that the jar just got sealed, and there mm-hmm. you go. That salsa can sit there for the next 5 years in your cupboard.
Oh, amazing. And we can do it with what else? Not just salsa.
Oh my gosh, everything you can think of. Everything you can think of, like you can make sauerkraut, you can make, I love to pickle cucumbers and asparagus and green beans. I mean, you can do anything you can imagine. Like one of my favorite ones is, you know, I love apple pie. And so in the winter, obviously, there's no fresh apples. So what I mm-hmm. do is I make that filling of the apple pie, which is like apples cooked with sugar and cinnamon and things like that. And mm-hmm. I do a apple pie in a can, so in a jar. So you put all the apple pie filling inside of mason jars and you put it on the water bath and you can it. So then in the winter, all you have to do is to make that pie dough and then open one of those cans and you have apple pie.
Amazing. And do I need to freeze it, refrigerate it?
No, once you can, it is shelf stable.
Thank you. I also understand that you use Korean natural farming and permaculture principles
right.
to nurture the land. First, let's start. What is Korean natural farming?
It's pretty much mimicking what the forest and nature does, which is taking, like, okay, so let's say you have a tree of apples in the middle of, you know, in the forest, whatever. Nobody picks those apples, right? So the apples fall to the ground that get decomposed, and then all the microorganisms in under the tree get to eat that themselves. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're in your house and you have right now, and you know, regular houseplants, you can start with three things. One, I would say save your coffee grounds after you made your coffee. Okay, make sure that that coffee ground dries so it doesn't rotten. Mm-hmm. And that is pure nitrogen for your plants. Now, eggshells is the next one. So save all your eggshells. You can put it in the oven to make sure it dries. Mm-hmm. And you can blend that to a fine powder, and that's calcium for your plants. So it's really just reusing fruits and vegetables to feed your plants with.
Do you need to mix it, or you just put it on top?
Just put it on top, and then you water it, you know, with your regular watering schedule.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what is permaculture?
Literally creating a 365 degree around system for your farm. So for example, I like to give the example of Mr. Pig. We have a pig a year. This year, he's called Barbecue Chip, and that's how the kids know that they're, you know, for food. Mr. Chip, he sits in this little, you know, not little, but I'll say like 20 by 20 square. That's where he lives, and we call it the pig tractor. And so he eats, because the pigs, they love to eat, you know, the roots and everything. So once he eats all the roots of that square, we come with a truck and we pull him to the next spot so then he can eat it again. And then we come and we like take all that, because he pooped in there and all that. So we scoop all of that out, and we put that on the trees and on the garden. Same thing with the chickens. We take all the chicken manure and we spread that around. Everything in the farm has its use, and just circulating all that together is one of the permaculture principles.
I see. And it seems like you're both the Korean one and that are very similar in the concept of you take the leftover or the garbage, air quotes, and just reuse it someplace else in the farm to
basically compost. Give back. You know, like your compost is the same thing. You know, if you imagine, again, before 70, 80 years ago, where you could just go to a store and buy food for plants, right, at the store, there was no store. Thinking back before there was that convenience of the store to give you whatever you needed at that time, and trying to understand how we lived in this place for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before that convenience, that's pretty much how we try to live by over here.
And you came from Brazil, which is completely different than Washington, close to Canada, where it's freezing cold and high altitude. How one learned that?
Yeah, so my grandmother used to save the coffee grounds and the eggshells for her flowers. And so I kind of grew up with that. And then at some point here in my career, I became a cannabis farmer in Northern California, where, you know, the amount of plastic jugs that were being used, I was like, there's got to be a better way. So I started remembering my grandma, and I was like, okay, so it's got to be something. And I just like went, you know, in the deep holes of the internet, and I stumble across Korean natural farming. And so I started using all the principles of Korean natural farming with the cannabis, and ended up taking a really great class with the Natural Farming Institute of Hawaii. And then finished that course, became a certified teacher. And that's when I understood that, like, hey, we don't need to go get very expensive plastic jugs of things. Like, nature is already there, available for us.
And what do you grow on your land? I mean, besides the pig and the yarrow.
Yes. So now, we moved here about 3 years ago. My father-in-law has been here alone for about 20. Place was dilapidated. We had to kind of fix everything. So spend the last 3 years kind of fixing everything. This year was going to be the big growing year, and my well, because we're on well water, my well decided to stop working.
Oh,
so we had no water. It cost about $20,000 to draw another well. You know, it's super hot here. It gets to the hundreds all the time in the summer. And so we kind of gave up on the growing because we had no water. And about, I think, 2 or 3 months ago, we drew that new well and we got 24 gallons a minute, which it's hard to explain, but it's the only way I can compare it's to like winning the lottery, you know. So next year, we're going to start our continue our project on what to grow. I do have, you know, we do have like a 30 feet by 40 feet garden, but that is all in a small scale just to feed ourselves. So for next year, we're going to start again.
It seems like it was a wake-up call or a reminder, a big reminder that at the end of the day, it's also fragile and we're dependent on the soil we live on and the water. And
yeah,
you can have all the money in the world, but if you're not going to have the water, then it's one ingredient.
Yeah, that's what I meant of like winning the lottery is actually better than winning the lottery because, you know, I could have won like $1 million, right? And they could have spent the whole $1 million drawing holes all over the place. And if there was no water, we could not live here.
Right.
We call it a water witch. Have you heard of a water witch before?
No.
Okay, so a water witch is an old school guy. He comes with the metal rods and he walks around and he waits until the rods cross and he's like, that's where the water is. And so we paid him $100. He walked an entire property and he said, the water is 20 feet from your existing well. We call the guys with the big, you know, machine to come and draw the well. They drew there and about 100 feet, we hit 24 hours a gallon. 24 wow. gallons an hour, sorry, a minute, which is insane. So water is life, no doubt about it.
Let's talk a little bit about the future or the future of food. What do you foresee?
COVID times have really showed people like, oh, wait, I can't go to the restaurant. What am I going to eat out of the grocery store? You know, like, I don't know how to fry an egg. I don't know how to cook rice. I don't know how to all that. So I think a lot of people have woken up to that. I think now is the time for the food revolution of understanding our spot into the whole ecosystem. You know, we need to eat. We depend on a grocery store. And so what can we do for our family? What are the little steps we can do to become a little bit more self-sufficient? And I think that if all of us do that, I think the big corporations and companies will follow suit.
Can you share one of your favorite dishes? I know you have probably one for each season.
Yeah. But... let's see. Winter is coming. And for me, it's kale. Kale is my winter superhero. I slice kale on everything you can imagine, like on eggs in the morning. I love to make breakfast tacos, scramble the eggs, throw some kale in there. If you're a meat eater, throw some sausage, some bacon or whatever. Scramble it all together. I like to clean the fridge that way. Oh, there's some carrots. Shred some carrots in there too. You know, and then you put that on the shells, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of sour cream, and there you go. You have a breakfast taco.
Fun.
Another one I like to do is I like to slice the kale super thin and fry it up with like flash frying, meaning like just really quickly, olive oil and garlic. It's so good. It makes my mouth water. Another thing is kale chips. So kale chips is extremely easy to make. You just go and you know how the bunches of kales are almost like bigger than you can ever use, right? When you get it at the store.
Yeah.
If you get a couple of bunches of kale, but you slice it into, you know, I would say 3-4 inch kind of chunks and massage that with olive oil. Because by massaging the kale with olive oil, you make it a little softer. Then I like brewer's yeast, and you can use brewer's yeast, you can use salt and pepper, you can use cayenne pepper, whatever it is, the flavor that you want, and you sprinkle that on the rubbed olive oil kale, and then you put it in the oven at 350, and you let it shrink up and become chips. It's delicious.
So we can make all of that, store it in a box, and it will be good for us for the rest of the winter.
Exactly.
Fun fact I've read about you is that you're the first female skateboarder in Brazil.
Not the first. We were the first. We're the first group of skateboarders in Brazil. So when my grandmother was telling me, like, you know, it's a very chauvinistic country, right? I was raised by my grandmother as my mother passed away when I was 4. And so, you know, there was a lot of like, oh, you need to learn how to knit. Why? Because you one day going to be a wife. You need to learn how to cook. Why? Because one day you're going to be a wife. And so I rebelled against all that. And instead of becoming a wife, I became a skateboarder and a chef.
Do you skateboard in your farm?
No, I don't. Actually, by the age of 30, so I started skating when I was 14. And we were one of the first group of girls skateboarding in Brazil ever. And by the time I turned 30, I was in San Francisco. I had a, you know, let me see, 23, so 7-year-old boy. And I was working in a kitchen on my feet, 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I was skating and I compound fractured my ankle.
Ouch.
Really bad. So that was a wake-up call that first, I'm not young anymore, and second, I need my legs to work and feed my child. So that was kind of the end. I still have a skateboard whenever I have the chance and I'm next to a skate park. I do roll around and play around, but I don't do tricks anymore.
So you focus on the farm and the cooking.
Yes, exactly.
What is your favorite tree?
My favorite tree is the elderberry tree by far. That's when you're asking about, you know, what to do for the winter too, is I like to do elderberry syrup. That keeps my family healthy through the winter. Mm-hmm. It's literally just elderberries and honey. And I cook that down, cook the elderberries first. You never want to cook honey for too long because then you lose all the nutrients from it. So I just cook the elderberries down and then I add honey and I save that in the fridge. And anytime I hear a sneeze or a nose or anything like that, I open the fridge and they get 2-3 big tablespoons of it.
Is that the same ratio of the elderberry and the honey?
I would say 2-1. 2 elderberry, 1 honey.
I see. Okay, I love it. I love it. Thank you, Michelle, for educating us on seasonal cooking and sustainable cooking, which are the same, and different type of farming, and of course, sharing your love with us to cooking and nature.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate being here. I'm glad to be here, and I wish all the success and luck.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.